ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम, कैंटो 3, चैप्टर 29, टेक्स्ट्स 11 एंड 12, ट्रांसलेशन एंड कमेंट्री बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस श्री एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद। मत गुण श्रुति मात्रेण मयि सर्व गुहा आशये मनः गतिः अविच्छिन्ना यथा गंगा अम्भसः अम्बुधौ लक्षणं भक्ति योगस्य निर्गुणस्य हि उदाहृतम् अहैतुकी अव्यवहिता या भक्तिः पुरुष उत्तमे मद्गुणश्रुतिमात्रेण मयि सर्वगुहाशये मनोगतिरविच्छिन्ना यथा गंगाम्भसोऽम्बुधौ लक्षणं भक्तियोगस्य निर्गुणस्य हि उदाहृतम् अहैतुक्यव्यहिता या भक्तिः पुरुषोत्तमे मद्गुणश्रुतिमात्रेण मयि सर्वगुहाशये मनोगतिरविच्छिन्ना यथा गंगाम्भसोऽम्बुधौ लक्षणं भक्तियोगस्य निर्गुणस्य हि उदाहृतम् अहैतुक्यव्यवहिता या भक्तिः पुरुषोत्तमे मद्गुणश्रुतिमात्रेण मयि सर्वगुहाशये मनोगतिरविच्छिन्ना यथा गंगाम्भसोऽम्बुधौ लक्षणं भक्तियोगस्य निर्गुणस्य हि उदाहृतम् अहैतुक्यव्यवहिता या भक्तिः पुरुषोत्तमे मद्गुणश्रुतिमात्रेण मयि सर्वगुहाशये मनोगतिरविच्छिन्ना यथा गंगाम्भसोऽम्बुधौ लक्षणं भक्तियोगस्य निर्गुणस्य हि उदाहृतम् अहैतुक्यव्यवहिता या भक्तिः पुरुषोत्तमे मद्गुणश्रुतिमात्रेण मयि सर्वगुहाशये मनोगतिरविच्छिन्ना yata gangam paso buddhau lakshanam bhakti yogasya nirgunasya hiyudaharitam ahaitokya vyavahita ya bhakti purushottame mat of me guna qualities shruti by hearing matrena just mai toward me sarva guha ashaye residing in everyone's heart manaha gatihi
the heart's course
avichinna continuous yatha as ganga of the Ganges ambhasaha of the water ambudhau toward the ocean lakshanam the manifestation bhakti yogasya of devotional service nirgunasya unadulterated he indeed udaharitam exhibited ahaituki causeless avyavahita not separated ya which bhaktihi devotional service purusha uttame towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation. The manifestation of unadulterated devotional service is exhibited when one's mind is at once attracted to hearing the transcendental name and qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is residing in everyone's heart. Just as the water of the Ganges flows naturally down toward the ocean, such devotional ecstasy, uninterrupted by any material condition, flows toward the Supreme Lord. Purport. The basic principle of this unadulterated pure devotional service is love of Godhead. Madguna Shruti Matrena means just after hearing about the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These qualities are called Nirguna. The Supreme Lord is uncontaminated by the modes of material nature. Therefore, he is attractive to the pure devotee. There is no need to practice meditation to attain such attraction. The pure devotee is already in the transcendental stage, and the affinity between him and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is natural and is compared to the Ganges water flowing towards the sea. The flow of the Ganges water cannot be stopped by any condition. Similarly, a pure devotee's attraction for the transcendental name, form, and pastimes of the Supreme Godhead cannot be stopped by any material condition. The word avichinna, without interruptions, is very important in this connection. No material condition can stop the flow of the devotional service of a pure devotee. The word ahaituki means without reason. A pure devotee does not render loving service to the Personality of Godhead for any cause or for any benefit, material or spiritual. This is the first symptom of unalloyed devotion. Anyabhilashita shunyam. He has no desire to fulfill by rendering devotional service. Such devotional service is meant for the Purushottama, the Supreme Personality, and not for anyone else. Sometimes pseudo-devotees show devotion to many demigods, thinking the forms of the demigods to be the same as the Supreme Personality of Godhead's form. It is specifically mentioned herein, however, that bhakti, devotional service, is meant only for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, Vishnu, or Krishna, not for anyone else. Avyavahita means without cessation. A pure devotee must engage in the service of the Lord 24 hours a day without cessation. His life is so molded that at every minute and every second he engages in some sort of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Another meaning of the word avyavahita is that the intent of the devotee and the interest of the Supreme Lord are on the same level. The devotee has no interest but to fulfill the transcendental desire of the Supreme Lord. Such spontaneous service unto the Supreme Lord is transcendental and is never contaminated by the material modes of nature. These are the symptoms of pure devotional service, which is free from all contamination of material nature. Madguna shruti matrena mai sarva guhashaye manogatir avichinna yatha gangam bhasom buddhau lakshanam bhakti yogasya nirgunasya hi udaharitam ahaituk yavya vahita ya bhakti purushottame. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Shreshtam Manamapi Shachiputra Matra Swarupam Rupam tasya grajamurupuring maturim goshtavatim Radha kundam girivaramaho radhika madhavasham Prapto yasya pratita kripaya shri gurum tamnatosmi Vandeham shri guru Shri Atav Pada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivishakhan Vitangscha Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Very beautiful description by the all-beautiful Personality of Godhead about the qualities of pure devotional service to Himself. Pure devotional service to Krishna is naturally beautiful, as Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport to these verses. The devotee in quality is on the same level as the Lord. His desires and qualities, he becomes one with Krishna. Pure devotee is one with Krishna in the sense that as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is nirguna, beyond this mode, the modes of material nature, so also is the pure devotee. So the pure devotee is one with Krishna in desire. He only lives to fulfill the desire of the Supreme Lord. He's one in quality. The Supreme Lord is naturally the repository and the source of all good qualities, and those good qualities, they manifest in the personalities of the pure devotees also. Sarva maha gunagan vaishnava sharire. That's the Bengali summary in Chaitanya Charitamrita of the statement of Prahlad Maharaj, yas yasti bhakti bhagavatya kinchana sarvai gunais tatra samasate suraha. The pure devotees of Krishna and all the good qualities of the demigods are naturally manifest in their personalities. So it's expected that someone who worships God will be good. It's not always like that. But it's thought that religious people should be good people. You don't expect a religious person to be a bad person. It can be there, but that person is not really religious. A religious person should be a good person. I remember in my childhood seeing some comedy sketch on TV of the bishop, who's supposed to be a very high-level, more than a priest, higher than a priest in the church. The bishop walking down the street with some two men on his side, just looking exactly like a gunda. So it was a joke, because if a lot of comedy is juxtapositioning opposite characteristics and putting what you don't expect in the personality of someone, and it becomes ludicrous. So in this way it becomes funny. So religious people are supposed to be good, and even people may not know what actually good means, and they may perform some, out of ignorance, they may perform some activities which are not good. I'm thinking about Christians and Muslims. Those who are serious about their religion, they'll really try to be good. They'll give charity to poor people and maybe spend some of their time helping poor people, and they'll try to be good in their dealings with others and not tell lies. They'll try to be good. And what I was saying, out of ignorance, they may eat meat because the culture they're raised in, they don't think there's anything wrong with it. But they're trying to be good. The ultimate goodness comes from being a devotee of Krishna. Parents, at least previously, used to tell their children things like, don't lie, share your toys with your other brothers and sisters, speak politely to elderly people, don't fight. I don't know if they tell them that anymore, because anyway, the child by the age of 2 is in the pre-KG, and the parents are too busy, the mother's too busy working to look after her child. So what are they going to tell them? But anyway, the idea is that you want to raise the children to be good. But ultimate goodness is to be godly, on the level of God. And that can come by worshipping God. It's another oxymoron, we can say, a godly atheist. An atheist would not... There may be atheists who in their general behavior are very polite and considerate, but they wouldn't like to be described as godly. They'd rather be... Maybe they'd prefer to be called ungodly. But the ungodly... The English word ungodly means to be bad. But they don't want to know God. So that in itself is bad. So all these qualities, we hear about these qualities, some of the good qualities Krishna describes in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. In the second chapter, he describes qualities of self-controlled persons, or whose mind is fixed, sthita dhi muni, or sthita pragya. In the 12th chapter, Krishna describes the qualities of saintly persons, advaishta sarava bhutanam maitra karuna evacha. And he goes on, but he specifically says, yo mad bhakta same priyaha. Someone who has these qualities and he's my devotee, he's very dear to me. So if someone has good qualities, but they're not Krishna's devotee, then still he's not particularly dear to Krishna. So all auspicious and good qualities, they arise from connection with Krishna, from the understanding that I am an insignificant servant of Krishna. One who thinks like this, he can have all good qualities in him. But what about people who are not devotees, and they may be good and kind and nice and smile at others and give charity to the poor, but they may be an atheist also. But about such people, Prahlad Maharaj further says that harava bhaktasya kuto mahan guna manorate nasati dhavatyam dobahi, that for those who are not devotees, they may appear to have qualities, but that's not actually a great quality. They may have, because they're on the manoratam, they're on the chariot of the mind. So, first of all, their good quality is wrongly applied. Just like if you feed milk and bananas to a snake, that's not a good idea, because the payopanam bhujanganam kevala vishavardhanam, if milk is supplied to a snake, then what will happen? Simply his poison will increase. So it's recommended, don't feed. You may think, well, I'm being very nice to the snake, but the snake's poison will increase, and then he'll bite you or someone else and kill you. So misapplying the misapplying the good qualities, not knowing that being nice, yeah, but first of all we have to see how Krishna is pleased. Otherwise it's a misapplication. Otherwise if we think, let us help the poor so they can live happily in this world, well, that's a misunderstanding from the very beginning, because there's no such thing as living happily in this world. We're talking about oxymoronic sayings. Oxymoron is when you say something like a square circle. It's linguistically possible to say square circle, but it's not possible to conceive of. It cannot be. So like the square circle. Prabhupada gave an example, an honest thief. Someone asked Prabhupada, can an atheist be sincere? And Prabhupada said, well, that's like saying an honest thief. The very meaning of a thief is that he's a rascal, he's dishonest. And Srila Prabhupada also gave the example, morality in this material world, it's like a gang of thieves, they rob someone's house, they steal so much jewels and money, and then they come back to their lair and they say among themselves, okay, now we shall divide this morally, honestly. It's ridiculous. The whole thing's ridiculous. So, material happiness It's like saying an honest thief. We think of it, and even in Shastra it's described. Swarga Sukh, it's described in Bhagavad Gita. Kshine Punye Mar. Well, Taitang Bhukva Swarga Lokang Vishalam Kshine Punye Mar. No, actually, the word Sukh doesn't come in there, but comes in the previous verse. So the idea of Indriya Sukh, the word is given, sense happiness. Well, that's true in relation to Krishna. If we serve Krishna with our senses, all our senses become happy. But there is a sense of happiness, but that is described as Shruti Sukha. That we hear of it as happiness. It's described as such, but wrong description. So the material happiness doesn't actually exist. What about material knowledge? Doesn't actually exist. Because, well, we can say, yeah, we know that the bell is ringing. And what is that in the Sri Vaishnava temple there? The bell is ringing. You can say that is knowledge. We know that Bengaluru is the state capital of Karnataka. So that's knowledge. But actually the word knowledge, if it's properly applied, it doesn't mean to understand something which is of no actual interest to the soul. What we need, real knowledge begins with understanding I'm not this body and develops to understand Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am His eternal servant. So material knowledge, we can say like that, but it's the word knowledge is not properly applied to understanding that the bell is ringing, or Bengaluru is the state capital of Karnataka state. Material intelligence, all these things. Intelligence means to find out what is our real self-interest. What is reality? What is the essence of everything? It's not intelligent to repair the window, try to repair a window on a ship when there's a big hole in the hull and the whole thing's sinking. You may say it's very, very expertly, very intelligently found out how to repair the window. In the meantime, the whole ship's sinking. So it's misplaced intelligence. Material success, you become a Premji Azad or Narayan Murthy or Bill Gates, and then you die. Where's your success? Class topper. Your photo will be all over the city. Class topper. It's great success. The class toppers, they never become very hugely rich. Is it? I don't think so. You never hear. They'll go on to IIT and they'll get some job teaching as a professor or something. They're not the Bill Gates or the Premji Azad. They're not the people who become the big. But even someone who's so big and rich, my famous saying, Aaj ka raja kal ka kutta. Aise hote hain. That was said about one of the prime ministers of India. One astrologer said that one man in Sweden has two dogs. One was formerly, well, I won't say, because the Congress people might not like me. One of them, great hero of the nation. So, great success. Now became, well, I guess being a dog in Sweden is better than being a dog running around the street in in Bangalore. They look after their dogs nicely in the West. It's a privileged existence being a dog in the West, not a cow. Very dangerous being a cow in the West. What about material improvement? The same thing. I decorated. See, we're going on a ship crossing the sea, and I arranged all the furniture in our cabin better, so it looks much nicer. We improved it. In the meantime, look, 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 look. The whole ship blooped. The whole ship sunk in the ocean. So, material improvement. We improved our position. Are they again the same thing? Ajka Raja Kalka Kutta. I improved my position. I was a nothing, I was a nobody, I became so great, and now you fell down again. That's the nature of material existence. So what's the meaning of improvement? It's something like going up on they have this Ferris wheel at the fairground. You go, oh, I'm going up, and then you must come down. Then you go up, then you go down. Then you go up, and then you, how high does it go? 100 meters? Not that high. 50 meters, whatever. You vomit from 50 meters and on the people below you. That's on the Ferris wheel. What about material existence? Does it exist? Do we really... In a sense, material existence is not really existence at all. Na sato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha. It does, bhava in this sense, it means that which comes into being. So it comes into being, then it's gone. Comes into being, then it's gone. It's just like you see a spark in the fire, comes out of the fire. Did you see it? It's already gone. If you try to point out, look, there's a spark coming out of the fire. By the time you point it out to someone else, and they look, it's already gone. So you could say it exists, but it's so temporary that it doesn't exist in the full, real sense of the term. So whatever situation we have. Even if we have a life as long as Lord Brahma. Koto chatur arana mari mari jautu. Srila Prabhupada sometimes quoted from the poet Vidyapati. How many Brahmas are coming and going? Brahma's life is longer than we can imagine, but Brahmas come and go. What's the most successful position in the material world? Being Brahma. You know that Brahma, once when Krishna was here 5,000 years ago, he went to visit Krishna, and the doorman said, oh, stop! Who are you? You have to tell your name, what's your business, you can't come in. My name's Brahma. So the doorman went and told Krishna, Brahma's come to see you. And the doorman told Krishna, and Krishna said, well, which Brahma? So he went back and said, which Brahma? Yeah, what do you mean, which Brahma? I'm Brahma, you know. Yeah. I'm Brahma, you know, the four-headed guy who sits on the top, on the lotus at the top of the universe. Oh, okay. He went back and said, okay, four-headed Brahma. So he came back, the doorman said, okay, you can come in. Then bowed down his foreheads at Krishna's lotus feet and said some prayers, and Krishna asked, okay, nice to see you. Why did you come? He said, first of all, I have a question. What did you mean, which Brahma? And Krishna laughed. Haha, which Brahma? Okay, I'll show you something. Then Krishna called all the Brahmas from all the universes. And there were Brahmas with tens and millions of heads, 20 heads, 60 heads. I've only got four heads. And then he realized there's a Brahma in every universe, and there are so many universes. He was thinking he's the biggest and the best. But first of all, he wasn't even allowed in. And then when he came in, he wanted to know which Brahma. He thought, there's no one greater than me. And he found out he's the smallest Brahma of all. So what is this material success or material existence or anything? It's all meaningless. We have to tell people that whatever we are striving for, whatever we think is good, whatever we think is a success, it's all nonsense. Everything that goes on in this world, it's all, except Krishna consciousness, it's all ridiculous. Again, it's the example of, or you can give another example, driving in a car, going very fast, very good, comfortable car, going very fast, it's going straight toward a brick wall. And in the meantime, you're adjusting your seat so it can be very comfortable. You're driving toward a brick wall, put the brake on, stop, don't disturb me, I'm adjusting my seat. What do you mean? It's a very comfortable car, very safe car. It's got the number one safe car of the year award. What are you telling me? Everything we desire, separate from Krishna, is all meaningless, nonsense. And so many hospitals, they have knee transplants and heart transplants and what else? Kidney transplants. What else transplants? You can get an artificial hand put on, artificial legs, artificial, what else? You can get your hearing aid. And then nothing left. It's all plastic, right? You can get everything transplanted, but you don't know that soon you're going to have a replacement, replacement heart, replacement knee, replacement kidney. And soon you're going to get a replacement body. You're going to have a total transplant. You're going to be taken out of one body to another body. And what kind of body? You can order it. What kind of body do you... No, you can't. Next life you want to... I don't have any heart problems. I don't have any kidney problems. And So I'll order my body. Okay. And now you've got a big, strong, healthy body of a buffalo. Congratulations. That's what we get. If you've become too much concerned with physical health, then you may get a very healthy body. We didn't ever hear of any sick, weak lions, did we? You ever heard of a sick, weak lion? Maybe when they get old, they also get sick and weak, but they never, very strong bodies, or elephants. We never heard of a weak elephant. It's another oxymoron. So we can get an animal body if we're so much concerned with the body, and then from the body, that's attachment to the body, that develops attachment to the family, and we become so much concerned. It's very cruel, actually. It may sound very cruel, the descriptions in the Bhagavatam. Everything that's nice in this world, it rejects as being foolishness. What's the nicest thing? Nice little baby. Bhagavatam says that one becomes, have you read in, this is also in the third canto, Kapila Dev's teachings, the little sounds of the baby, they mesmerize the person and they become completely foolish and attracted by that, not realizing that attachment to babies, attachment to anything in this world. It simply binds us in this material world. We keep photos of our man goes overseas to work hard to get money for his family and keeps photos. Why I'm working so hard. They're tied in material existence. On the other hand, to be totally hard-hearted and reject any kind of affection in this world, that's also not desirable. to be just to have total disaffection for, well, the word disaffection, non-affection. So how are we supposed to live in this world? We're not supposed to be nasty to everyone. We're supposed to be kind and maitra, karuna eva cha, Krishna says. So what does that mean? That means giving Krishna consciousness, but it also means acting with people in a manner that is pleasing. We don't unnecessarily act in a displeasing way with others. So Bhagavatam describes that internally we should develop detachment. But a grihastha, he has to perform his duty to his family members. But internally he should know that everything in this world is temporary. I have no real relationship with any of these family members on the mundane platform. If the family members are also devotees, then the family members, conjointly, they cultivate Krishna consciousness, their eternal relationship with each other. And in the meantime, meals have to be cooked and served, bills have to be paid. So one, they go on in the normal way as everyone else does, but there's a big difference. Krishna is in the center. So that's this Kapila Dev, he recommends that just as a man can see the wife, if he looks upon the wife as his object of enjoyment, that will bind him in this material world. And similarly for the woman, who is supposed to look upon her husband as pati devata, that the husband is just like God to me, but at the same time, you should realize that any bodily attachment is that will bind us in this material world. So we really have to see everyone in this world as part and parcel of Krishna, and those who are acting on that platform, relate with them on that platform. That's why it's very strongly stressed in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in the Vaishnava culture. Don't see devotees by their material background or by their caste. It's very strong consciousness. Probably it's breaking down in Bangalore to some extent, but in the smaller town, the caste consciousness, very strong consciousness. But if we see devotees according to their caste and relate to them like that, that is actually offensive. Vaishnave jati buddhihi. So if we don't see devotees according to their devotion, if we judge them according to their material position, how educated they are, how rich or poor they are, how beautiful or not beautiful. Every time you hear some boy wants to marry, he'll only marry a beautiful girl. He himself is as ugly as anything, but he wants to marry only a beautiful girl. And there are not that many beautiful girls around, sorry ladies. But but why? The main criterion should be, is she a devotee? Will she help me in my spiritual life? Will we serve Krishna together? That should be the consideration. So it's a balancing act in Krishna conscious family life. On the one hand, one shouldn't be attached to family members. On the other hand, one has the responsibility to live with them, and there will be some affection. And it's not that a devotee just becomes totally hard and nasty. You're Maya. You're Maya to me. My husband says, well, you're Maya. And she says, well, you're Maya to me too. And what the hell are we doing together? Okay, let's get a divorce. But you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to assist each other in Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, Kunti Devi, who could have a better family than her? I mean, her husband was already passed away, but at least her immediate family, her sons, they're all great devotees of Krishna. But she also prayed to Krishna, Sneha Parshame Manchindi, you please cut the ropes of affection. We'd be very happy to have affection. Jira Pandushu Vrishnishu, for the Pandus and Vrishnis. The Vrishnis are the family members of Krishna. So we want to have that kind of affection, but in her own judgment she was thinking that I'm just seeing them as my family members. But we should see them first and foremost as devotees. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, towering acharya, his wife is also a pure devotee. Her samadhi is there in Mayapur. Do you know that? His wife's name? Second wife, actually, Bhagavati. If you go in Sri Chaitanya Math, and at the back, now what am I talking about? It's the Jogpit, at the Jogapit. At the back, there's a temple of Lakshmi Narasimha and Gorgadadha, and her samadhi is just there, underneath. So she's also a great pure devotee, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and she brought forth. What an acharya, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And several of his sons, they were devotees. Lalita Prasad was also a very dedicated devotee, and daughters also. But he was praying, so many prayers he made, that in my youth, dharma smarane grihine kore. Considering dharma, I accepted the hand of a wife, and then I wandered here and there trying to earn some money. I got surrounded by so many children, and I couldn't worship you, Krishna. He's a great pure devotee, but he's feeling that this family affection, it's simply bondage. And that family affection that spreads also. Ato griha kshetra in Bhagavatam is described, that the attraction between male and female, that then that spreads to having a house, and then kshetra, that can mean one's own land, one's own little plot of land. But it can also mean our country, and that's very much promoted at the present time, nationalism. We should become nationalistic, our country. Of course, in the Shastra it's said that the land which is now known as India, that is the best place in the universe for spiritual advancement. So in that sense, Mera Bharat Mahan, India. But then if you think it's Mera Bharat, no, it's Krishna's Bharat. It doesn't belong to me or you. It's all Krishna's country. And this land is glorious because here the culture is very strong, it's still strong compared to other parts of the world, for understanding that we have nothing to do with this material world anyway. So to become attached to it in the sense of thinking that we want our cricket team to win, we send a something or other to Mars. What do they call that? Chandrayaan is the rover. It's called a rover. A rover to space rover sent to Mars. It's and great. But this identification on the mundane platform binds us to the mundane world. And it's fairly easy to understand in relation to India, right? If you think that, yes, it's good to be born in India because it gives us a good opportunity to be Krishna conscious. But to identify with the national cricket team or the sending the space module out to Mars, that is material. That kind of identification will bind us in this material world. So that can be applied in family life also. That yes, it's good to be in family life, that Krishna has recommended in the Varnashram system. There's the Grihastha Ashram. If we're all cooperating, that on that platform, we should be happy in family life. But if we become attached on the mundane platform, it may be more difficult to sort it all out. Then that becomes the cause of our bondage in this material world. So even to be very pious, one can be attached to being very pious. Krishna, in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, he criticizes people who are attached to the Vedas. Well, that's very pious, isn't it, to be attached to the Vedas, Vedavada, to the words of the Vedas. That's good, isn't it? That's better than being an atheist and a drunkard. But Krishna criticizes that also. It's definitely better to be a Vedavadarata, to be attached to the word. It's a better position than being a drunkard and Hiranyakashipu. But in and of itself, it's not the perfection. It also binds us in material life. And specifically, those who are Vedavadarata, they want to be in the material world. They think it's enjoyable. They're attached to being pious. That can be very dangerous, to be attached to being pious, as without understanding that real piety is to satisfy Krishna. Krishna tells the story, we find that in Mahabharata, of the man who vowed never to tell a lie. And he went throughout his whole life without telling a lie, and he went to hell because in one circumstance he should have told a lie. He made a vow, I will never tell a lie. And one day, just coming past his house, a man came running looking very scared and said, I'm a merchant, I'm holding so much gold with me, some rogues are coming up behind me to chase me and take the money, where can I hide? So the man who had vowed never to tell a lie said, just go in the just at the side, you see there's all the trees in the jungle, you go and hide in there. Then a few minutes later, a gang of thieves came running up and said, did you see a man running this way? We're thieves, we're chasing him, we want to kill him and take all his gold. So a man said, oh well, I vowed never to tell a lie. Yeah, he went in there in the jungle. So the thieves went in there, they killed him, they took his money, and the man went through his whole life without telling a lie, and at the end of life he went to hell. Because he thought that his vow not to lie was more important than protecting a person by telling a lie in that situation. So piety can be very dangerous. King Riga, he was so much committed to piety, but the nature of this world is that there was some little mistake and even against his will, he committed some wrong activity and he had to suffer a hellish condition because of that. But over and above the dangers of being pious and religious without being surrendered to Krishna is not being Krishna conscious. That's the main fault. The main fault of everyone in this world is not being Krishna conscious. That is the main fault. And within that there are gradations. There are drunkards, rogues, murderers. There are ordinary people just trying to live their life. There are very pious people giving in charity. There are gradations. But it's all missing the point. So the pure devotees, they're described in these verses. They're fully attracted to Krishna. They're at that is the perfection of life. Even they eat and they sleep just to stay alive so that they can serve Krishna. So even the sleeping of a pure devotee can be considered devotional service, because Krishna take akhila cheshta. They do everything for everything they do is for the pleasure of Krishna. Now that doesn't mean that a devotee, he sleeps 15 hours a day. See, sleeping is also devotional service. He minimizes that so that he can be active in Krishna's service. A truly advanced devotee, he becomes fully detached from the world. Like, how many are like that? How can we? Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, he lived in a latrine for some time because he thought that so many materialistic people are coming to me and asking me, I'm doing my japa here, and they're thinking, this is a very powerful sadhu, let's go and get his blessing so we can get some material benefit. So then he went to live in a latrine, because he thought, well, people, they'll think it's a very contaminated place, and they'll leave me alone, and I'll sit in the latrine and go on with my chanting. So, exceptional, you could say, transcendental, eccentric. But we may say then, well, you see, Srila Prabhupada, he also had so many nice rooms in Melbourne, in London, in New York. There are so many nice facilities. What's his relationship with Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, who's totally renounced? But Prabhupada is also fully detached from the world because he knows how to use everything in the service of Krishna. It's not that he has any personal attachment to anything. So we may think that, oh, you see, Prabhupada living in luxury. He was also very happy in January 1977. He already had so many beautiful rooms arranged for him, beautiful facilities in so many temples all over the world. But he lived for several weeks in Bhuvaneshwara. It was just an open land, and he lived in a little grass hut, grass and mud hut that had been built by hand by Gaur Govinda Maharaj. He took baths from the tube well. It was open land with snakes and scorpions, and Prabhupada was very happy and very nice. He didn't ask, fly me out to London so I can be in my nice quarter. He's very happy. He said, actually, I like to live like this, but for the sake of preaching, we need nice facilities so that people can come. And actually, in London, if you see, Prabhupada's room's very, very luxurious room. Have you been there? No, you went to New York, you didn't go to London. Huh? In New York also, the quarters that Prabhupada had, that building sold, unfortunately. In Melbourne, you can see also still Prabhupada's room. It's very nice rooms. But then the devotees, they arranged to bring so many people from the top echelons of the British society would come to meet Prabhupada for weeks and weeks. They brought all big people, Lord Brockway and Graham Hill, who was an internationally famous racing driver, and George Harrison, who is internationally famous musician, and Donovan, who is an internationally famous musician, and there was some famous historian, Arnold Toynbee, who was a very famous historian, and all big people they were bringing. If Prabhupada was living in a mud hut, no one would come to see him. So those facilities were used. People came from the radio, from the national newspapers. So Prabhupada used all that for preaching with no attachment to the world. So we can't live like Gorky Shaw. And even as a preaching movement, it's not recommended that we do. We have to keep pace with the world, not that we try to become luxurious for ourselves. Sometimes people criticize that, why is there so much money spent for religion? There was a film a few years ago, Oh My God, that was a Hindi film. And they were criticizing why they're spending so much money for religion. Why not feed the poor? I was at a press conference. They asked me about this. And I said, well, this movie made so many crores of rupees. How much money are they giving to the poor? And I told them, you see, India's not a poor country. It's a rich country. But the problem is that most of the money is in Switzerland. Otherwise, there's enough of everything that everyone in this country can eat and live in a house, and most people do anyway. So some people criticize like this. It's very difficult to find the balance, actually, because for some people, if you go in nice silk cloth and you drive in a Mercedes car, and some people will, oh, big important sadhu. And they'll we should listen to him. And others, if you go like that, they'll criticize. What is this? He's supposed to be a sadhu, so much luxury. It's difficult to find the balance. We should see whatever is required to please Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, when he came to America, he had nothing. He was wearing plastic shoes, those pointy shoes. I don't think they make them even anymore. Those plastic pointy shoes. And he had nothing. He was a beggar, actually, if from the materialistic point of view. He had no place to stay. Well, he had his book. He sold his books and he lived like that. Later he was... had so many followers, so much luxury and everything, but his only intent was how to serve Krishna. And all good qualities were of the pure devotee, they were absolutely manifested in him. When he was in India with nothing and no followers, and when he was in America in the beginning with nothing and no followers, and later he became... world, known as the world Acharya. But all good qualities were always manifested in him because of this one principle, anyabhilashita shunyam. He had no other desire than to satisfy Krishna. He was always beyond nirgunasya hihudaharitam. That's stated. He was always beyond the modes of material nature. Ahaituki avyavahita. He is no desire. What he did, everything he did, was only to please Krishna. No personal desire whatsoever. And continuously, at every moment, he was only contemplating to serve Krishna. There are two words, actually, in English. Continuously and continually. They don't mean the same thing. It's not exactly the same thing. Continuously means a constant flow, and continually can mean something that happens repeatedly. Just like the window, it blows open and then it slams shut. And then the wind again makes it go open and again slam shut. So you can say the window is continually slamming. It's not continuously slamming. Most even English people, English speaking people, don't know the distinction. Srila Prabhupada's devotional service was continuous, not continual, not on and off. And that is the standard he wanted to bring us to. And so, and from that, all good qualities develop. There's no need to go to have any separate moral teachings for how to be good, how to be kind, how to deal with others in a pleasing way. That automatically develops. Sarva Mahaguna, what is that? I said it before. Sarva Mahaguna Gana Vaishnava Shure, all the good qualities develop in a pure devotee. For neophytes, we have to follow the process of devotional service. It's not good to imitate the behavior of pure devotees. We may think, well, a pure devotee, they're like this, so I should also be like that. Yes, we should follow in the footsteps. We should try to be like the pure devotees, but not to imitate. In the early days of the movement, there were devotees, they tried to chant with exactly the same voice that Prabhupada used in chanting, and then they might chastise others in the way that Srila Prabhupada chastised. Even Srila Prabhupada's dress style, there's no harm in that. Have you seen this kind of cap? That you've seen photos of Prabhupada, he would wear this cap. Sadhus and people would wear in North India, especially in the winter, maybe in the summer also, because of that loo wind. It covers the. It looks like an old aviator's cap that they put on, and that covers the ears very nicely to keep the cold out. And many devotees, male devotees, used to wear that also. There's no harm in that. But it's not that because Prabhupada wore this cap, I'll also wear one like that and then I'll become just like Prabhupada. It doesn't happen exactly. It's something like a child imitating the father. So at the same time, we should know we have a long way to go. And for neophyte devotees also, neophyte, madhyam and even uttam, all are recommended to follow Varnashram Dharma. Even the topmost devotees, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was following, Prabhupada was following, they got married and then later took sannyas. It's all part of the Varnashram system. Not to be attached to it, but to live in the world according to the system that Krishna has given. We have to live according to some system. If we're going to relate with others, we have to have some kind of social system and social norms. So Varnashram Dharma is the system that Krishna gave to help us come from the status of a conditioned soul to being a topmost Paramahamsa. We can't do it all at once. So we should be attached to this, to the lotus feet of Krishna, not attached to this world, but also live in this world in a sensible way. That Rupa Goswami also advises to not be neglectful in ordinary dealings. So, for instance, you're a married man, then you have to see if your family is fed, children are looked after, not to be neglectful in such matters. Even, I was saying, we shouldn't be overly concerned about health, but we should not be overly non-concerned either, because we have to use this body to serve Krishna. And in the present age, just to keep the body healthy is quite a challenge with the pollution, and the lifestyle is such that there are so many work-related diseases. What do they call it? Lifestyle sickness or something like, what's it? Lifestyle?
Lifestyle diseases.
If people lead overly relaxed lives, they don't get any exercise, and therefore their bodies become very weak. And the ladies, they used to grind by hand the rice for the idlis, or in North India for the chakras for the wheat, and they would do the other chakra for the cotton, and they're carrying water. They don't do it. It's all done by machine now. And then when you have to deliver a baby, you have to have a cesarean operation because the body's not strong enough or healthy enough. So in the present age, there's so many diseases and so many, just it's ordinary to be sick. So we shouldn't be detached from, we should be detached from the body and not overly concerned. At the same time, we have to serve Krishna. We have to look after the body so it's healthy for serving Krishna. So we should bear that in mind. Recently, one of my disciples, he was 42 years old. Hare Krishna. He's no longer with us. Heart attack, collapse, gone. He was 42, he should have had a regular checkup. Because kabhi bhi kuch bhi ho sakte, especially as you start to get older. Anything can happen. So one should live in this world very sensibly, but always keeping in mind that we're only here to serve Krishna. I have other responsibilities also in this material world. Let us do it all in relationship to Krishna. It's a very beautiful two verses. Let's read it again. It's really our inspiration as we go on in this miserable world. This inspiration, this aspiration that we can come to this platform. Madguna shruti matrena mai sarva guhashaye manogatir avichinna yata gangamba saumudha yata gangamba saumbudhao lakshanam bhakti yogasya nirgunasya hiudaharitam ahaituk yavya vahita ya bhakti purushottame. You learn that, Dhammana? The manifestation of unadulterated devotional service is exhibited when one's mind is at once attracted to hearing the transcendental name and qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is residing in everyone's heart. Just as the water of the Ganga flows naturally down toward the ocean, such devotional ecstasy, uninterrupted by any material condition, flows toward the Supreme Lord. Very beautiful, very inspiring. Oh, one point I should make here, that same example is given. I'd quoted Kunti Rani, the Sneha Pashmi among Chindhi, Duru Pandashu Vishnushu, that you please cut the attraction to the Pandavas and Vrishnis. But then she prayed for her attraction to Krishna to be just the same as this, the Ganga flowing toward the sea. How does that verse begin? Ganga Voga Madanvati is the last line. Twayme Nanya Vishaya Matir Madhupate Sakrit Ratim Mudvahate Adha Ganga Voga Madanvati. Thank you very much for knowing the verse and reminding me. She prays that. How does it begin again? I forgot it already. Twayime Ananya Visha. She's Ananya. She's praying for Ananya Bhakti. That my devotion may flow toward you only, just as the Ganga flows always toward the sea. Very beautiful prayers, huh? It's much better than learning for a CA exam or... Much better, huh? Any young men here unmarried like to join as brahmacharis? Seriously, you don't have to get entangled with it. It is an entanglement. It really is. Family life. You have to work hard. You have to fill your head up with all kinds of things like CA or computer programming or things which are really a distraction to the goal of life. You can live as a brahmachari, and then you can spend your time studying shastra, distributing shastra. You can do it. Think of it. Yeah, you put your hand up. Very good. Just be with your father a little longer, then we'll put you in the gurukul. Hare Krishna. Any question, please. I've kept you late. You all have to go to work. What are you doing? You're going to get chastised by your bosses, huh? Why are you late? Hare Krishna, thank you so much for coming. One question on a working day.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you. Good class, Maharaj. I just wanted to ask one question. Like my friend.
Okay, ask it, ask it.
Like nowadays we have too much attraction between these girls, boys, and all this attraction is there.
Yeah, that's another thing. In city life, you go to work and the young girls, they're not shy at all. They shouldn't even be there. They should be at home having already 2-3 kids. But they're in the workplace. They had 2-3 abortions instead of 2-3 kids. Yeah, well, what to do? Come join the Brahmachari Ashram. Then you. Really? What's stopping you? You got a debt to pay off, maybe. And they'll make terrible wives, these girls, if they ever get married. Like I say, they already had 10, 11, 12 boyfriends, 2-3 abortions, and what kind of wives are they going to be? How do you deal with it? Shave your head, go to work with tilak, and whenever any girl, anyway, if you do that, they won't flirt with you, but if you do, you just say, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare. Then you can't make advancement in your job. Great! It's very difficult. The modern world is just set up for sinfulness. Very bad position. Hare Krishna, vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhyavacha patita nam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.